making sense. We've been intoxicated, mesmerized by the materialistic world for which reality is identified with materiality, which is a lie. Our duty, however, is to convince those who don't deny even the existence of the angels that there is a spiritual world created by God to serve the interests of the human race. We are to grow in our devotion to the angels, whose service of God is to cooperate with us in reaching our heavenly destiny. Look, let's be honest. I'm speaking to you. I'm making certain presuppositions. First, I assume that all of you have a mind. That's a presupposition. I presume that I have a mind. I further presume that my mind, which is a spiritual being, can communicate with your mind, which is also a spiritual being. That's what, pardon me, this class is all about. The moment a person dies, as we say, I try never to use that expression, somebody died. No, that person's body died. The soul lives on. And let me tell you, do you know what one of the cardinal principles of the original Protestant reformers was? They did not believe, and the followers do not still believe, that when a person dies, that soul remains conscious and has a free will until, if you please, thanks, until the last day. That's the main historical reason why Protestants have not prayed to the saints or hear the angels for over four centuries. We are finally to become more aware. We are to become more aware than ever before of the existence of an angelic evil world that is constantly at work to seduce human beings. And if anyone does not believe in the modern world, our United States is deeply, profoundly seduced by the evil spirits, plural, that person is living in an unreal world. Mothers just don't hate their children to kill them, say in their womb. And over the years of teaching comparative religion, every single non-Christian polytheistic religion in history, no exceptions, has always taught that children should be killed to propitiate what they called their malicious or malevolent deities, whom we call the evil spirits. The devil is behind abortion. It's not a pious statement. That is infallible truth. Now we start with ecclesiastical authority. There are three main sources in the church's history for what we know about the angels from the highest authority, namely, general councils of the church approved by the Bishop of Rome, the Fourth Lateran Council, the First and Second Vatican Councils. Question 51, therefore. And by the way, are there some questions in the boxes? Let me see how many. Quite a few. I want to answer as many of these as I can. Our plan for Mass, what time do we usually have Mass? 4:30. Is it 4:30?
Yes.
So, I'll continue this a little longer on the class and then answer questions. First, what was the occasion for the Fourth Lateran Council, 1215 A.D.? The occasion for this council was to defend the faith against the Albigenses. If you're going to know anything about the angels, you better know something about Albigensians, also called the Albigensian heresy. Albigensianism was a modified form of Manichaeism. It claims both Manichaeism and Albigensianism are widespread in the world today. To use the past tense, it claimed that a good deity created the world of the spirit and an evil god created the material world, including the human body, which is under his control. The good deity sent Jesus Christ as a creature to deliver human souls from their imprisonment. On these terms, the good angels were created by the good deity and the devils by the evil God. This heresy is so seductive, Manichaeism in the 4th and 5th centuries, and Albigensianism in the 13th. It is so persuasive that no less a genius than Augustine, for 9 years, was a Manichaean. And this is Augustine, a Manichaean. He would write, pardon me, and afterwards he would write too, but he would pray to the good deity, "Now, you good God, any time you want to, take over my life. You're welcome, but sorry to disappoint you. It's obvious. The evil deity is in control of my life. As he continued living his life of lechery, and won't you believe that there is an ultimate source of good, an ultimate source of evil? What do you deny? Free will." Augustine's great discovery was that he had a free will. Once he discovered that he had a free will, he went, we might say, into a panic. Augustine, all this evil that you're blaming on the evil deity. Stop it. Stop it. You've got a free will. I may have told you some years ago, I was invited by a television station in Chicago to engage in a dialogue for 2 hours, 12 midnight till 2 in the morning, with a leading Satanist in America. I said I was interested, but I want to know more about what kind of a Satanist is he. Is he real or is he a joker? If a Satanist, he must have some faith, must believe in Satan. And the correspondence I had between the Satanist and myself. The Satanist became impatient. That's enough. They set a date. The station manager called me up, terrified. I've got a deadline from the Satanists. Either you and they debate on a certain date, or they're calling everything off, and they threaten me. I wasn't ready, because being Satanists, you'd expect them to be liars. But among the correspondence that I have in my files from the Satanists, I said, "What is your philosophy?" I'll never forget. Our philosophy is Manichaeism. Do you hear it? Manichaeism. You worship your God, we worship our God. Your God does wonderful things, our God also does wonderful things. Now 52, and with this we'll close the lecture part of today's course. The teaching of the Fourth Lateran Council comes in several parts. I think I should save the further explanation till the next class, but just to quote what we've got here and give a short commentary on each. First, there is only one true God, eternal, immense, unchangeable, incomprehensible, omnipotent, and undescribable. Eternal. God never came into existence. He always was, always will be. Immense. He is everywhere. As I've said more than once, I'm sure, my favorite definition of nothing is where God is absent. Unchangeable. How we need to hold on to this. Because God is unchangeable, His laws are unchangeable. And among the errors condemned by Pope John Paul II in The Splendor of Truth was the error called situationism, widely taught in Catholic institutions of higher learning. Morality changes with each situation. Adultery used to be a sin, but, well, things have changed. Incomprehensible. We can never fully understand God. Comprehension means full understanding. Only God fully understands Himself. Omnipotent. God can do whatever He wants to do. Can God tell a lie? Of course not, because God does not want to tell a lie. and undescribable. All the vocabulary we use about God is borrowed from our human experience. Secondly, God has no beginning. He always is and always will be. God is the creator of all things, visible and invisible, spiritual and corporeal, who by his almighty power from the very beginning of time has created both orders of creation in the same way out of nothing. The spiritual or angelic world and the corporeal or visible world. God created the angels out of nothing as a defined dogma of the Catholic faith. Afterwards, God created the creature man, who in a way belongs to both orders, as he is composed of spirit and body. How we need to keep telling ourselves, wake up, wake up. You're not just body, we are spirit. And needless to say, the more important part of our being is that which leaves the body when, as we say mistakenly, we die. The spirit leaves the body. While that human spirit, hear it, remains an individual person, retains its powers of knowing, retains its powers of learning, retains its powers of desiring, retains its powers of choosing and loving. And finally, the council defined the devil and other demons are created by God good, according to their angelic nature, or they made themselves evil by their own doing. How we need to hear this. Every evil person made himself evil. Whether that person is human or angelic, it all depends on how we use our free will. If we use our free will to choose what we want, we become evil. If we use our free will to choose what God wants, we become good. And we go in goodness only in the measure that we sacrifice our own will, what we want, to the will of God. I did not learn that last night, beginning at 2:00 this morning. Am I now 49th year in the priesthood has taught me a great deal. Everything depends on how we use our free will. With that as a background, these are the questions. How can we perceive the effect of baptism on someone or lack of it? I have met seemingly good unbaptized persons. Well, there are two kinds of good persons. there is what we call a moral goodness and what we call essential goodness. Moral goodness is a person's behavior. Essential goodness is a possession of grace. Can people who don't have, say, the grace received at baptism, but are receiving graces from God, can they be good? Yes. Can even people who are baptized behave in a bad way? To some baptized people, sometimes, on rare occasions, commit a sin. The essence of goodness is the possession of grace. So even unbaptized people receive grace. However, the important thing is not how we behave. We should behave, well, as good people. The important thing is, how much grace do I have? Well, the Manichaean view of the human body as compared to the Genesis view of the human body. Well, that's a very good question. Because the followers of Jansenius, whether they realized it or not, were Manichaeans without knowing it. Jansenius, the bishop of Ypres, died, as we say, in good order, condemned after his death as a heretic. He was a Calvinist in disguise. Jansenius held with the Calvinists that some people are predestined for heaven and others for hell. Well, Jansenius was really a Manichaean in heart. In other words, some people are good because they were created by the good God. Others are evil. I'm sorry, pardon me, but I've been created by an evil deity, as Augustine for 9 years excused himself. Well, I might have a problem reading these yellow contributions. I think I better not try. Thank you. We have this. The owl, who is part of the snake family, considered evil. Shouldn't people not have pictures of them, that is, of owls, on their walls, like in Brazil, who are considered evil? No, they should not have pictures of owls. I think I did say this before. Most people wouldn't know the difference. But if they really believe that the owl, which it does, symbolize evil, they should not have. Any advice to a family in the Lansing Diocese? The parish priest and school principal have told them they must remove their daughter from the 7th grade if they won't let her attend a month at sex ed in the religion class. Pray for the new bishop of Lansing. Oh, maybe these were from last week. Maybe they were. If one doesn't know the faith all that well, but is interested in learning and teaching, is there a thorough training available? Should one sign up for the apostolate teaching? Yes. So I think I've told you at least briefly in our last class. We now have 12 bishops. I had a long talk with Bishop Myers in Peoria. He's delighted to join the Episcopal, well, cooperated with the Holy See. We now have 12 dioceses. Yes. And hopefully, by the next class, when is our next class?
31st.
March?
31st.
Is it?
On Sunday.
How many weeks from now?
Four.
Please?
4 weeks.
4 weeks from now. Well, surely by then, I'll be in a position to share with you, because this week my plan is to contact the bishops and then get a feedback from them, have a meeting by telephone before the end of the week, and then once they decide on how we're going to do this, Bishop Mengling, by the way, signed up. Then I will share with you how the lay apostles, or the lay apostles, pardon me, that's you, I hope, will be trained. In our diocese, our bishop has appointed nuns as to be pastoral leaders. Is there any way we can stop this besides prayer? Well, the issue, as you know, is very complex. There's a shortage of vocations. I think I'm correct. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think I saw that this year, or for this year, there were 4 priests ordained for the Archdiocese of Detroit. Anybody know? That was my figure that I saw.
Seven.
Was it 7? Well, Peoria is a village compared to Detroit. This year, 12 priests ordained for Peoria. So the shortage of priests is one of the reasons. Now, if a parish is supposed to be kept open, somebody should be in charge. And, of course, once 42 parishes, that's the number that were closed in Detroit. That's my figure. You've got thousands of people, really, without parishes. I would say the real issue is not whether the pastoral leader is a nun or not. Of course, in my humble judgment, there are ordained deacons. They receive the sacrament of orders. The most important thing is, what does this pastoral leader believe? That's the real issue. But, well, Holy See is telling me, organize the laity and get bishops to do the work. That's what we're doing. I will keep you informed. Should women be Eucharistic ministers or take communion to the sick in hospitals? Well, as you know, so many women are Eucharistic ministers. I'll give you my own personal judgment. I have never encouraged, I'm speaking for myself, I have never encouraged a woman to be a Eucharistic minister. In the United States, I don't have the statistics, but all the evidence I have tells me that most Eucharistic ministers in America are women. It is part of the feminist movement to get women ordained. I could talk on that subject, of course, for hours. Why is the Enneagram being permitted to be taught at Sacred Heart Seminary? You know, I'm speaking in Detroit, the Archdiocese. I'm here with the permission of the Archdiocese of Detroit. I think a very short answer to this question is because those behind the program do not really know what the Enneagrams are. They don't really know. I'll be delighted, just thrilled, to be able to speak at Sacred Heart Seminary, and even 1 hour would be enough on the Enneagrams. Thanks for the question. Father, I fear ridicule and its connection to casting my pearls before swine. Now, first, make sure they're swine. As you know, there is a statement. They ask, what's the correct answer? Are we encouraged by Scripture to cast pearls before swine or not? Yes or no?
No.
We're not encouraged to throw pearls before swine. Is that correct? Is that what you understand?
Yes.
That's my understanding too. I believe, I'm not sure, but I believe behind this question is, should I say, well, try to teach the faith or encourage people who have, say, given up the faith? Figuratively, pardon me, the swine. Should I throw the pearls of the true faith to swine? Well, as a Jesuit, I would say, even with a swine, there's such a thing as outwitting. We are trained from the novitiate on how to be cunning, shrewd. Some people are swine, they don't know it. The poor dears. Be very kind. Should we practice kindness even towards the swine?
Yes.
You shouldn't be cruel even to animals, right?
Right.
It's remarkable. Oh, by the way, don't be afraid of ridicule. First of all, try to outsmart the people who would like to ridicule you. How many of you have read How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie? Highly recommended. Strategy in dealing with people. The person is an obvious heretic. We don't have a feminine gender for heretic. Pardon me, We could use one. You've got to outsmart these people. I think I've told you, my years in teaching in Protestant seminaries, not once was I asked to give even a single lecture, not to say a year's course, on Protestantism. You've got to master the technique of dealing with people who disagree with you. Learn all you can about these people with whom you disagree. One reason why I wrote 3 books in Protestantism. Know all you can about them. Try to build on what they believe. What would you say to a worship committee to convince them to erect a large crucifix in the church? This church, which is 20 years old, has no crucifix. Well, I think I should say this, even though I know I'm being taped. My Vatican directors, you can't imagine how much strategy I learned from Rome. I've been told over the years there are 2 ways to convince people who need to be convinced. One is money, the other is publicity. Mazuma, 14 years of living in New York. Oh, the power of money. I have to say it because the question was asked. And the second, publicity. If you can convince the pastor, and you might have to know somebody, for example, in the secular press or the secular media, Father, we will feature you on television, maybe just 5 minutes, standing in front of this beautiful crucifix which you have built in your church. People like publicity. Just a reminder. Well, that's a personal question. Should a parish mission be given by a priest? A parish mission. It's a mission coming this month. We haven't had for a long time here at St. Colette's. Interesting talks. Practical spirituality. And her name is Sister Claire Fitzgerald, S-S-N-D. She was an Irish Catholic from Boston. Well, obviously, thanks for asking the question. It would be all far better if a priest could be invited to give the mission. Should one attend the mission? There might be some value in both attending the mission and maybe taping at least some of her contribution. He promised names of insurance companies that were UOM, United UOM, with the Magisterium, I guess. Yeah. Again, how can we find out the names of truly Catholic companies, businesses to associate with? As you know, I've been out for 2 weeks, and believe me, I was kept busy since I returned home. And is it 3 or 4 weeks from now we're having our next class?
Four
weeks. Well, by the time of our next meeting, if somebody, the person especially who submitted this, to please leave a message and with the office here, as you know, I have an office here at the Grotto, and we'll get a list of companies. This has to be done, including, of course, the insurance company. If the angels cannot enter into the center of our beings, where only God dwells with us, can they read our thoughts? Can they hear us when we speak to them? Only in our thoughts, or must we speak out loud to them? How do angels influence our thoughts? Now, we haven't covered that much about the angels to answer this question in full. The angels, as we've said before, cannot read our thoughts. But the angels, whether good or the evil spirits, they were extraordinarily intelligent. They can recognize our thoughts from the effect on our body and hear it. There is no thought we can think which does not affect our body. Do you hear me? All our thoughts come from our bodies, from bodily senses. So it's the sensory manifestation of our ideas. So we don't have to speak out loud. For example, my gosh, all you have to do, and this is why, if you don't have, it would be wise, at least one small picture somewhere of an angel, maybe of Archangel Michael. And maybe a statue. Doesn't have to be a big one. Something which is sensibly perceptible that would tell the angels, oh, this is a friendly home. They think about us. Could you comment briefly on the book Faith of the Early Fathers by Father William Jurgens? Yes. I believe there are at least 3 volumes to this collection on the faith of the fathers. Not just the early fathers, but the later fathers too. I would strongly recommend that you get those books. I think it's 3 volumes on the fathers of the church in English. And I never thought I would say this publicly. Father Jurgens may hear about it. If he does, so what? I was ordained a priest. And my pastor in Cleveland got a young assistant priest by the name of Father William Jurgens. Well, the pastor and I were good friends. He wrote to me, the pastor did, "I've never had an assistant like this. Can you imagine? My assistant, he reads Latin. He reads Greek. He likes to write." So I said, "Could you send me a sample or two of what your unusual assistant writes?" So without informing his young assistant, he sent me copies, samples of his writing. I'm not sure Father Juergens knows about it even now. I read what Father Juergens wrote. I told the pastor, "This Father Juergens of yours is a very intelligent man. You see, he does his work. Yes, but I know his heart is not in pastoral ministry." So I advised the pastor, "Why don't you make an appointment with the bishop? Tell him I told you to talk to the bishop. Suggest to the bishop that this assistant pastor of yours be sent to Rome to get a doctoral degree in theology." The bishop did so. Father Juergens has been writing over the years. Highly recommended. Couldn't be better.